All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. We're here once again to explore our culinary interests in the Comox Valley and the area around us. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser, and here with my co-host, as usual,
Darren Howlett. And today we have our friend Connie Earle sitting in with us. Connie's known for being the manager of the Atlas Cafe for the last few years, about 10, 12?
About 10, yeah.
Yeah, about 10. And Connie's in today to talk with us about wine.
Well, I have to start off most people don't know, but Connie is one of my favorite people in the world. And whenever it comes to talking about food or talking about wine, she's a person I always go to because she has such a great wealth of knowledge. So it's always nice to shoot ideas off of her. And you came back to the Atlas because you originally started when the Atlas first opened there. And then you came back at the same time that I entered into the Atlas. So it's been sort of a great working relationship that we've had for the last 10 years. So
that's right. The respect is mutual for sure. I came off a stint of working as a private chef on boats. I had been doing that for about 4.5 years when I returned to the Valley.
All right.
So I was still very kind of jazzed up about food as well. So John and I got to connect and, you know, touch base on the fresh sheet and that sort of thing, bounce ideas around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she always pushed me to go that next level. Like, that sounds good, but what if you added this? I'm like, I didn't even think of that. That's wonderful. So, but today we're doing your specialty, I think. What you're very passionate about, and that's wines.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I've come into a little bit more. It's definitely an extension of the food world, and I think I came into it, you know, being in charge of the wine list at the restaurant, and then, of course, for the last several years at Avenue as well. Right. So trying to choose wines to pair with the foods, and, you know, it's not always about what I thought was the best wine, but what I thought would be the best wine to go with the food and would be sort of the crowd pleaser, what people's palates would enjoy, and, of course, to support the local BC wineries.
Yes.
And so today I brought a BC wine, in fact, and trying to decide which one was not easy, of course, but I decided to go with a red because I think it's pretty unanimously agreed upon that BC whites are amazing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was recently at the Bloom Show in Victoria. It's an annual spring wine show, and there were, I believe, 70 BC VQA wineries represented at that wine show. So it's pretty incredible. And to see how many have sprung up in the last several years.
That's amazing.
It really is, yeah. And I feel like the level of the artisan craftsmanship, there's so many of the estate wineries. And it's just wonderful to see what's happening on that front.
Yeah.
I did, however, choose one of the one of my go-tos, Naramata Bench, of course, is one of the best growing areas in the Okanagan Valley. And Lake Breeze is definitely one of the creme de la creme, You know, you could pretty much pick any Lake Breeze wine and you'd be
happy.
You'd be happy. I'm actually just getting a new wine list together for the summer, and we're going to be featuring their Sauvignon Blanc on the By the Glass program, so I'm excited about that.
That's nice.
So. Yeah, it's really nice. And, I mean, BC Sauvignon Blancs are quite a lot different than the New Zealand ones, but they have similar characteristics, but it's interesting to see the expression of the grape coming out differently here as opposed to there.
Yeah, right. There's a total contrast between different regions and different areas, just the flavors that are produced from within those grapes, which is quite amazing.
I'm always amazed at how much you're able to, or how you're able to ferret out, just find those sort of, those great value wines, or to find those sort of standout wines that just separate themselves from the crowd. There's obviously a lot of research that goes in, and I had no idea that we were up to, again, that many wineries just in BC alone. Mm-hmm. It's obviously quite a bit of commitment to, on your part, to be able to find these great wines that you do. That's incredible. It somewhat takes me back. When I first got into the industry 20 something years ago, wine was definitely focused. It was a carrot sort of held in front of me that if I could nail a few wine courses, wine tests, that I'd be able to become a server, because at the time I was very young, and it was sort of not the way that this particular business dealt. They just thought I was too young, but they said, if you can do this, we'll give you a shot. And and in my early days of serving, I was always very up on wine. And then I took about 10 years out, and I felt like the whole industry just moved a huge step forward, and I was lost. And still now I'm like just getting caught up. Even years back into it, I'm just feeling like to get a little more comfortable, and a little more comfortable with my palate too. Like I'm feeling that come back to where I can sort of distinguish features. And again, that comes with a lot of your tutelage. I wouldn't have been looking for those things. Quite often you'll say, oh, you know, I detect a little bit of leather there. And I'm like, where is she tasting that? And then I taste it. I'm like, oh my God, of course, it's right there. But I wouldn't have thought to taste that until, you know. But yeah, it's great. So I'm excited. I want to see what you've got for us today.
Okay. Well, I brought the Lake Breeze Merlot, which, in fact, we do have by the glass at Atlas as well. The 2012s, which this is, are tasting particularly good. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the 12s, the 13s, the 14s, they're all going to be quite generous because we've had really nice weather. Mm-hmm. So the grapes have had an opportunity to ripen fully and just really have a more generous kind of supple palate to them. Just for fun, I decided to bring along my aerator because we do aerate our by-the-glass wines at Atlas, the red wines. Right. And it is, some people say, oh, it's hokey, it doesn't, you know, change a thing. And I have several times done the comparison between the two, and I really think it does make a difference.
Right.
Now, we did pour this wine, what, maybe 5-10 minutes
That's
ago,
right,
so it has had a chance to kind of do its thing in the glass a little bit.
We didn't want to listen to the funneling.
Exactly. It's not a nice sound. I wouldn't know.
No, and for anybody that's not necessarily familiar with what an aerator is, it's just a device that you pour the wine through, more or less like a funnel. But it gives it a chance to mix with a bit of oxygen as it's pouring through.
That's right. Venturi is the name brand of this one, and it is probably one of the most common. And it is said that it's the equivalent of aerating your wine for 4 hours by pouring it through this, which takes seconds.
Right.
So, yeah. And I mean, they do make them for whites and reds. I never tried a white one. I kind of think, well, white wines... Yeah. I just can't imagine them needing it to
they
the
don't
same
generally
extent.
Need that time to
breathe. Just because there's, you know, more going on with the reds, with the oak program and everything, you know, that you do get a little more kind of rough edges for that. So anyway, let's begin.
Sure.
To start, I mean, it always is helpful just to give your wine that extra bit of air before you taste it, so swirling it around in your glass.
Exactly.
And also, it's a bit of a strange thing, but smell it out of both of your nostrils. I mean, one at a time, both,
really?
And then kind of move to one side and then move to the other side, just because we all have strengths and weaknesses in all parts of our bodies.
Right.
And our left nostril may be more open than our right, or it may perceive different sensations, that sort of thing. So it's always interesting to go from one to the other, and you'll smell different things in each of your nostrils.
You said something that at first I would have thought it's ridiculous, and I just did it, and you're right. I smell. I get a much stronger scent out of this side, and this to the other side seems dull. But
so anyway, I mean, thinking about so before you even taste the wine, it's nice to get a sense of what are you smelling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting some really nice berries, just really ripe blackberry, a little bit of juicy like plum, but more of a roasted plum. The flesh of the plum, not so much the tartness of the outside, but the inside has a certain kind of sweet generosity to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of that. A little vanilla, I think, from the oak, probably.
No, I'm picking that up a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So then to go from smelling it, when you're tasting it, when you draw it into your mouth, really try to bring a little bit of air in it, in with the wine when you're bringing it in. And, you know, it's you can be quite exaggerated and make a show of it and really, do that. But you can also do it quite discreetly, too. And I mean, it's something play around with it and see what's comfortable for you. But you do all the inside of your mouth perceives different flavor sensations on different parts of your mouth, different parts of your tongue, the sides of the mouth, the roof of the mouth, that sort of thing. So by taking the wine in, bringing a little air, and then swishing it around in your mouth before you swallow it, you'll really find that you're going to get the layers of flavors much more so.
Wow.
All right. I like how it all goes silent.
We're thinking.
Thinking.
So, I mean, I think something that can be said about Merlot, for instance, there was that show, oh gosh, the name is escaping me. Was it Sideways? What was So touring through wine country, and there was the big joke about Merlot. Well, who wants to drink Merlot? It's this soft pansy wine with no character. And definitely, you know, I think there was that generation of winemaking, sort of 70s, 80s, where the people were just looking for a soft, easy drinking wine.
Right.
But I mean, you think about it, Merlot is one of the prime grapes of the Bordeaux region in France. And it is the staple in many of the regions. A lot of those Bordeaux wines are Merlot dominant.
Right.
And it does, can have a lot of character and structure and body and that sort of thing, depending on how it's treated. And I would say across the board, it's hard now in this market to find a soft, kind of bland Merlot. Merlots are being treated, you know, the way that they should be.
Right.
It's one of the noble grapes, and certainly this one is much more of a food wine, I would say.
Right.
You know, there's some nice tannins and oak on there. You know, when you say tannins, that's kind of what's kind of going to make the sides of your mouth feel a little bit stripped.
Yeah.
And when you're not eating food, you might, you know, initially this one, I mean, you perceive it a little bit. It's not doing it to a great extent. Some wines, like especially the bigger Bordeaux style wines, for instance, you will, if you're not eating food and you take a sip of that, it's almost like an underripe banana.
Right.
That you get that real, oh my goodness, my mouth is suddenly just puckered right up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then you take a bite of a steak and suddenly there's this, juicy generosity that presents, you know? So this one I would say is more in the middle. It's not going to knock your socks off with tannin, but there's enough there that is going to pair nicely with your food.
It's going to accent a heavier meat product.
Exactly. And I mean, this one, I would say it is a medium bodied. I wouldn't say it's a full bodied. So you could go, say, the pork schnitzel, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, the richness of the jus, and it's got, you know, the body of that and the pork itself. I think that, you know, there's enough going on there that this wine would be nice with it. It's maybe a little light for a steak, but you could certainly get away with it, you know.
Right.
But I would probably go just a little bit heavier. You know, you want something with a little more structure for a steak. But anyway, let's taste the aerated version just to see.
And I got the small cup for this
one. Be careful.
This could be deadly.
I was definitely sold on that as well, like in the early 90s when I was sort of began with wine, when I first had my first dalliances with wine. I immediately caught into Cabernet Sauvignons, and I was convinced that that's all I liked was Cabernet Sauvignons. And it took me years to sort of step out of that. But I was the same way. I was always like, oh, don't waste your time with Merlots. Merlot, you know, it's just a waste of time. Why would you bother?
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until I started working at Atlas. And I realized that now Merlot and Pinot Noirs are pretty much my two favorite. Like, those are my go-to grapes.
Mm-hmm.
But those two were nowhere even near my radar until working there, when I saw that, again, everything had gone that one giant step forward and everything had matured. And people really started to figure out what they could do with grapes here and how to best grow the grapes here.
Well, I was talking to one of the winemakers when I was at that Bloom show a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me that they have this one vineyard that's in this special spot, and the grapes for this wine in particular that we were talking about, he had harvested a few this day, a few that day, a few the next day. He would go 2 to 3 times a day with his team and just say, okay, these are the ones we're going to take today.
Wow.
And then the next day, let's take those ones.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a craft, you know? It's not this jug o' juice kind of, you know, wine industry that it once was. and I know in particular, I've been getting a lot of flack from people in the restaurant for pouring BC Reds.
Oh, I don't drink BC Red, you know, people say.
But I urge people to give it another try.
Right.
And especially, like I say, with these 2012s coming up and the fact that the grapes have been able to get, you know, that much riper, definitely revisit if you're shy about BC Reds. Give it another go.
A lot of people are really concerned about dealing with those wines, or is it just they think they were rushed? And I mean, our growing time is a little bit shorter than a lot of places, so
yeah. And I don't want to offend anybody in saying this, it's only my personal palate.
Yeah,
but two of the grapes that grow really well here are Zweigelt and Maréchal Foch,
right?
And both of those grapes, to me, especially Maréchal Foch, has a bit of a cherry cough syrup aspect to it.
Right.
Zweigelt leans a little bit more to cherry cough syrup with a little bit of black licorice, but it's a very distinctive taste. And there's been one wine, actually, Roger at Alderley Vineyards made a clarinet, he called it, and it was 100% Maréchal Foch.
Yeah.
And it was just a magic moment with that wine that that's the only Maréchal Foch that I've been able to really enjoy.
Wow.
But I think that may be part of the perception that those grapes in particular have been quite popular in BC winemaking because they do grow well here.
Right.
Now that our weather has been warming up the last several years, you know, people are getting more savvy too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know Avril Creek, for instance,
right,
are doing a lot of tenting. So their Merlot is being started under tents in this spring.
Right.
So it's getting that head start. And then again in the fall, they're prepared. If it starts to get wet in the fall, they've got those tents back up.
Right.
So they are able to get the grapes to the ripeness that they need.
Right. Wow.
So, and of course, a lot of the wineries will, especially, you know, island wineries, will import some grapes from the Okanagan as well.
Right.
Just to kind of round out. They don't have enough quantity from their own vineyards or that sort of thing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, let's to sort of get back to this wine. Do you? I don't know how much I taste of a difference between the aerated version and the straight pour.
I'm feeling well. I think they were both open for a little bit and swirling it around and everything. If anything, I would say the aerated one might be a little bit softer edges. Just that that's a bit of that kind of tannic, the oakiness, everything. I find it kind of rounds out the hard edges, which, you know, when you first open a wine and pour it, it is going to have a little more kind of, well, the flavors just aren't quite as integrated, I would say, you know, and then as it sits, it does kind of open up and
just
show itself a little bit more. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
So yes, well, the silence is when we're tasting.
Yeah, we're
tasting and pondering.
I gotta say, I like the wine. I mean, regardless, either the aerated or non-aerated version, maybe I'm just not perceiving it. Maybe I'm just not as refined of a palate. Normally I can.
Well, let's go back and taste again the non-aerated.
Go back the other way to see.
I'm all for it to jump back and forth.
We'll just keep drinking until we're out of wine, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling now going back to the non-aerated one. The fruit flavors aren't as soft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting sort of the aerated one. I was getting a more really nice ripe cassis note to it and a little more of that soft, subtle vanilla.
Right.
Whereas going back to the non-aerated one, I'm getting more kind of oakiness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know if you're feeling that.
I don't have all the terminology yeah, I don't know. But there's a certain warmth that I'm getting from, and I don't mean like, you know, in my throat or belly, but there's a certain warmth to the wine that I feel is in the aerated version now.
Mm-hmm.
There's, and I don't know if that means that is the mellow, like the mellowness, or I don't know. That's just how I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the aeration certainly helps the flavors to sort of come together a
just
little bit to round it out. Yeah.
I'm finding it's a little smoother, just that sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and we should point out, Connie's not being sponsored by the BC Wineries.
Oh, no.
This is purely opinion. This is purely whatever. But I just, out of curiosity, obviously you spoke of, you know, the praises of Lake Breeze. Are there other BC wineries right now that you really got your eye on that we should be watching?
I would say some of my favorites, Clos du Soleil,
right,
is kind of a BC boutique winery.
Right.
So many of their offerings are beautiful. They do a Celestial, is wonderful. It's a red, one of their premium reds. Their rosé is, I tasted a lot of rosés when I went to that Bloom show, and their rosé was one of my favorites for sure. And they did this year 100% Cab Sav, which is kind of fun because you get to see what is that Cab Sav grape without the oak.
Right.
You know that it's just the grapes. The other thing is some wineries, speaking of rosé, some wineries will make their rosé from the sort of off pressings of you know, the red wine making process, and other ones make the wine just for rosé, and I know Clos du Soleil is one that does that. The other standout rosé, since we're talking about it, was the Tinhorn Creek, beautiful dry Provence style.
Where are they
rosé
from?
They're Okanagan as well.
Okanagan,
So getting back to favorites, Clos du Soleil, Poplar Grove is amazing. Let me see, Lake Breeze. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Tantalus is another one to look for. Their wine's more kind of French style, very elegant. Le Vieux Pin, again, a little more top shelf, but really that the craftsmanship that goes into it, you really taste. I mean, some of the classics, Grey Monk.
Yeah.
They have been in business for, you know, 25, 30 years, and they family-run operation. Their wines are great value and consistent. Quail's Gate.
Right.
Almost everything that I've tasted from Quail's Gate has been amazing. If you're looking reds, Burrowing Owl is always a good bet. Right. Their Syrah was fantastic. I tried that just recently. Those are probably the kind of the standouts. I know I'm missing some really amazing ones.
It means catch off guard
too. Shooting off the hip here. So we're going to have to write a list for people so that they can go out there and sample themselves and see how well you're on the mark on this.
Well, and you know, I think it's really great. The BCLDB is now starting to bring in a lot of the more local offerings, which they didn't have so much. I mean, you know, they had sort of the main vineyards, but they're getting in a lot more now. And then, of course, with Cascadia and Liquor Plus, you can get a lot more of those boutique BC winery.
I definitely like the way that the liquor retail aspect is starting to develop. It definitely, for years, it seemed like it was just the BCLDB, and they were just covering bases. They didn't actually sort of delve deep into certain... in everything, like in beer, in wine, and what have you. And now it seems that they are sort of embracing niche. And,
definitely.
And yeah, it's great. It's great to see this happening.
Okay, and I have to say, I would be remiss if I didn't mention our local wineries, of course.
Of course, right.
Beaufort is as amazing as ever. Jeff and Susan are not so much at the helm anymore, but they're still consulting on the winemaking front and
so
in the vineyard as well.
Standards.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just carried right through. And Mark and Freya are just doing an amazing job kind of managing the place, and they've got the new tasting room and everything. But I went out there recently and had a tasting, and again, the same thing. I mean, they're passionate about what they do and it shows. You know? So we are at Atlas carrying their Pinot Gris by the glass. And then for their reds, we have the M&M just rolling into that. That's the Malbec Merlot.
Right.
And Malbec is kind of a neat grape too. I mean, it's definitely a bit of a sweetheart grape right now, I would say. A lot of people, just that real full body, kind of spicy note, a lot of people are really enjoying
right
now.
I find myself being drawn to
it. And I mean, it satisfies. It's got that nice fullness to it. But so I'm excited to get into that. And then also, of course, 40 Knots. I just love their Soleil Brut Rosé.
Right.
Yes. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. Just creamy, beautiful dry style rosé.
We were lucky to get them in for an interview, and it was
fun
sitting and chatting with them. And I like the way they're going with the vineyard. I think there's going to be some really amazing wines coming out of that place in the next little bit.
Definitely.
Yeah, for both, actually. Yeah.
And
both.
I'm excited too, just to see their passion for the possibilities, you know. This valley is just been amazing for supporting local food and wine ventures. And right. I think that they are kind of running with that. They're building a kitchen. I think they're collaborating with Ivan's Truffles and getting that. You know, they've always offered a little sample of chocolate with their dessert wine.
Right.
While it's probably going to be, you know, Ivan's Truffles now will be that little bite of chocolate. And it is kind of that dynamism that really makes the food scene so exciting here in the Valley that people are willing to go out on a limb to support each other.
Yeah.
That it can be that close-knit culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's sort of the background of or the impetus of the show, right? It's just like that collaboration between everybody here. It's just fantastic, and we just love embracing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everyone sort of pushes themselves to that next level, right? So
definitely.
Yeah. You're like, oh, they're doing that. I better learn how to do that.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, this seems like as good a place as any to sort of wrap things up. Thanks for sitting down with us, Connie.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And thanks for bringing some wine along.
Of course.
And if you have any other wine questions, Connie's always at the Atlas Cafe, so you can always pop in there and ask her suggestion, of course, right?
I am always lurking around if anyone has their wine list open. Oh, do you have any questions? I've tasted them all.
All right.
Well, thank you for listening to the Edible Valley podcast. Like us on Facebook and check out other episodes that we have coming up.